This is the fourth in a series on Daniel. In fact, it's fourth in the series, and it's going to be from chapter 4. Very good. And though the message is given during Thanksgiving week, I could count on Mr. Zajac to give a very fine message for Thanksgiving week. But I think you'll find in this message, because I do want to continue with the series, you will find in this message a thankfulness theme throughout. How many of you, I'm sorry to ask you all these questions. I'm so sorry. So I feel like Peter Falk. I just have one more question. I'm really sorry. How many of you saw the meeting between, it was in the news, between Kanye West and Joel Osteen? Yeah, a few of you did. Anyway, does everybody know, do I have to explain who Kanye West is? Oh, wow. I'm so out of it. Would you call him a popular rap singer, right? Yeah, kind of? Why is everybody over 60 nodding their head and nobody under 60 is ready? Is he a popular? Yeah, it's good enough. All right, I got some nodding. Okay, good. I got thumbs up. Okay, good. How many thumbs up do I got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Good enough. Anyway, do you know who y'all know who Joel Osteen is? Yeah. Okay. Lots of thumbs up. Well, anyway, they met. It was in the news. And funny enough, Kanye West talked about, he's got this big spiritual crusade he's on. It's very interesting. That's not what the message is about. But guess what he brought up? He likened his journey unto Daniel chapter 4. So I just wondered, if you're listening in, we're going to talk about it today. So, recap. In the book of Daniel, Judah has been taken captive and carted off to Babylon, far to the east. In fact, that was mentioned in the first message. Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar, is a translation of the Akkadian that God Nabu, or Nabo, saved my firstborn son. He is king of Babylon. And Daniel and his three friends, remember their names? Oh, you remember their Babylonian names. There, okay. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Anybody remember what their Hebrew names are? We haven't got that much time. It's okay. It's all right. It's okay. It's good. We're good. We'll call them Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Does anybody remember Daniel's name in Babylonian? Very good. It's always nice to remember these pagan names. A little troubling. But in any event, and so Daniel and his three friends are taken as captives. They're young men. The first test they get into is not eating from the king's defiled table. They pass straight A's, and God blesses them. The second test, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream of an image of a man with a head of gold, silver, bronze, etc., etc. And a kingdom or a rock strikes the bottom. And under threat of death, Daniel interprets the dream. The four images, there's four kingdoms. King Nebuchadnezzar is pictured as the head of gold, if you remember that. Third test, King Nebuchadnezzar decrees that all subjects throughout Babylonia will bend the knee to this image of him that he has set up in the plain. And anybody that doesn't is thrown into a fiery furnace. Guess who doesn't bow? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Don't bow, but they are delivered. And that's chapter 3. In all cases, there is a pattern that emerges in these first three chapters, and we'll see it in the fourth. It starts with Nebuchadnezzar. This guy is either an insomniac or he's got issues. He's just a drama king, drama queen. He has some issue. It starts with him. He's troubled and he's confused. He needs answers. Daniel and the three men, they perform some type of miracle. Nebuchadnezzar is beyond grateful, promotes Daniel, promotes his friends, and Nebuchadnezzar acknowledges the God of the Hebrews. He states, in fact, in Daniel chapter 2:47, you need not turn there, 2:47, the king, Nebuchadnezzar, answered unto Daniel and said, "Of a truth, your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets." It could be added until the next chapter. That's true. So this is a pattern, and we'll see just exactly in chapter 4 what happens. The purpose of the series is to apply the concept that to a lesser or greater degree, we live in a type of Babylon. And it can be interpreted by many different authors and many different people in many different ways. But it is basically a different world system. A different world system where we are expected to live appropriately by God's commands and to respond appropriately all the while living in Babylon. Today the title is, I really thought this one through, Babylonia, Egomania, with a subtitle of Daniel's Fix. So if you'll turn with me to Daniel chapter 4, we're going to do quite a bit of reading. It's quite a bit of narrative, as we'd say. It's storytelling. And it's a fascinating story. It is, without a doubt, for this fourth test, this chapter is unique in all the Bible. Truly unique. Recall in chapter 2 that the language in the original has switched from Hebrew to Aramaic. So what you're reading is not a Hebrew translation. It is an Aramaic translation. It's very, very different than the rest of the Bible. It also will move from first person back to third person, back to first person alternately. Very unique in that it does that. But what's most interesting, because this chapter begins and ends with the same type of theme, we call it it's called a chiasm to some degree. It starts where it ends. What's fascinating about this chapter, it is near wholly written by the hand of a pagan king. It's written by Nebuchadnezzar in the main. And that's unique in the Bible. It lets him have a voice. It lets him speak to the readers in the book of Daniel. So it's very interesting. So let's begin in chapter 4, verse 1. Now this is, I'm going to just picture the king speaking this. Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs, how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. His dominion is from generation to generation. Wow. Would the leaders of the world today say those things today about God? What's interesting is he starts off in verse 4 of what happened and why he says these words. And I want you to remember these words about kingdoms and everlasting, his signs, his wonders, and his dominion is from generation to generation, which means without end, from everlasting to everlasting. That's what it means. His kingdom is also without end. It is also everlasting. And that theme will be picked up again toward the close. He now recounts the dream. In verse 4, he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. And I want you to get this image. Remember Babylon. This is one of the great wonders of the world. The gardens of Babylon are considered one of the seven wonders of the world. And Nebuchadnezzar was at rest. He says, in my house, he flourishes in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Therefore, I issued a decree to bring all the wise men of Babylon before me, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers came in, and I told them the dream. They did not make known to me its interpretation. And we've seen this story before. You would think he'd get the point. Doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result, is called insanity, or the federal government, whatever, or state, local, civic governments. Doing the same thing, he keeps calling these guys up, they've got a zero batting average, he's going to give them one more try, and they fail again. They did not make known to me its interpretation, but at last Daniel came before me. His name is Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And I told the dream before him, saying, Belteshazzar. Now notice his title now. Notice his title. Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God, yeah, talk about a contradiction. I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you, and no secret troubles you. Explain to me the visions of my dream that I've seen and its interpretation. The king is troubled by this. Very troubled. So Daniel is about to hear the dream. He also knows that everyone before him, all the trained astrologers, magicians, the soothsayers, all the chief dudes, were unable to answer this. And Babylon's king Nebuchadnezzar, he believes that the spirit of the holy God of heaven is inside Daniel. though he still keeps calling him by a pagan god. He still calls upon him, and he's troubled by this dream. So he goes to the guy who's got a 1,100% batting average. These, verse 10, were the visions of my head while on my bed. He begins the dream. I was looking, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached to the heavens, and it could be seen to the ends of all the earth. Its leaves were lovely, its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it. The birds of the heaven dwelt in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw in the visions of my head while on my bed, there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. He cried aloud, and he said thus, chop down the tree, cut off its branches, strip off its leaves, scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it, the birds out from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven. Let him graze with the beasts on the earth, grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast, and let 7 years over him. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets over it the lowest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belteshazzar, declare its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom were not able to make it known to me, the interpretation. But you are able, for the Spirit of the Holy God is in you. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Picture this great tree where all can be seen from the heights of the heavens to the distant parts of the earth. The animals and the birds know it. Everyone knows this great tree. Now cut it down. Cut it down, for the watchers have decreed it. The watchers. The watchers are an interesting term, interesting word. And it's used almost, in fact, it is exclusively mentioned only here in Daniel. It is mentioned later outside of the Bible. It's referenced heavily in the book of Enoch that appears 100, 200 BC. It was written before, during, and a little bit after the time of Jesus, this concept of the watchers. They are indeed, the word is ear, or irim. That's all it is. It's one who watches. Very interesting term. They seem to be, though they are poorly attested, a group of angels or powerful spirits that God uses to carry out his commands. The watchers proclaim the events against the tree. It's therefore a prophecy of them. The tree, notice in these verses, the tree becomes in verse 15, it goes from an it to a him. Let it, the tree, be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beasts. So this tree becomes an animal. Animal. So Daniel has now heard the dream. He's got a lot of pressure on him. It does not say what he does. It does not say what Daniel does. But we have a real good idea. If you want to go back to chapter 2 and chapter 3, I will guarantee you Daniel did what? He prayed. And I bet he prayed very heavily. As God gave him the answer, in the answer, he knew this was going to be one of the most difficult things he would tell Nebuchadnezzar. He'd grown high in the palace in Nebuchadnezzar's realm. He'd become the king or the leader of the magicians. I'm sure that's a title he would probably rather not have or explain quite that way. And I'm sure he got to know King Nebuchadnezzar. And he'd seen King Nebuchadnezzar, as had the other three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so we begin the interpretation and the explanation of the dream, verse 19. Then Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a time. His thoughts troubled him. So the king spoke and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation trouble you. You know, Mr. Fish, when he was doing the announcements, he talked about the nonverbal communication. And when you've known somebody for a long time, Becky and I have known each other for a long time, and we can, you know, it's almost telepathic. But when you've known somebody for a long time, we don't need to give high signs whenever you know it. I imagine Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel started to develop some type of relationship. I think that Daniel, in some way, cared a little bit about Nebuchadnezzar, as we can see from the dialogue that they had together. And he could tell, Nebuchadnezzar could tell from Daniel's expression that his thoughts troubled him. Hence the comment, do not let this dream or its interpretation trouble you, because obviously it had. Belteshazzar answered and said, my Lord, may the dream concern those who hate you, and its interpretation concern your enemy. In other words, I pray that this goes against your enemies. I hope that this is not at your hurt. May the dream concern those who hate you. But Daniel or Belteshazzar knew very well that it was on Nebuchadnezzar. So he's troubled. He says, verse 20, the tree that you saw, which grew and became strong, whose height reached to the heavens, and which could be seen by all the earth, whose leaves were lovely and its fruit abundant, in which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in whose branches the birds of the heaven had their home. It is you, O King. It is you, O King, who have grown and become strong. For your greatness has grown and reaches to the heavens, and your dominion to the end of the earth. It is you, O King. Did Nebuchadnezzar know that? The image related to him in the last dream. I think Nebuchadnezzar had a pretty good idea, though I won't speculate. I have no way, nor does anyone know, what went through Nebuchadnezzar's head. We're not told. But he probably feared the worst. This has something to do with me. He says, it is you, O King. Verse 23. And inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, the ear, a holy one, a kodesh, the kodeshim for the holy ones, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree, destroy it, leave its stump and roots in the earth, bound to the band of iron and bronze and the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven. And let him graze with the beast of the field. You can see the switch. Let him graze with the beast of the field till seven times pass over him. This is the interpretation, O King. And this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my Lord, the King. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven. And seven times shall pass over you. Till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and he gives it to whomever he chooses. He gives it to whomever he chooses. And inasmuch, this has to do with the watchers, because it refers back to verse 23, inasmuch as the king saw a watcher, verse 26, and inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O King, let my advice be acceptable to you. Let my advice be acceptable to you. Very important verse. Break off your sins by being righteous, your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. The king saw the watchers, the representatives from heaven. So this is very, very serious. By extension, these beings that came down from heaven were representatives, though it's barely mentioned, from God. This is God's doing. God has done this. And he says, this will happen. You will need to endure this until you know that the Most High, this is a very interesting phrase for God, the El Elyon, that you know that the Most High in heaven is boss. And he alone chooses who rises, who falls. Whomever he chooses, it is based on God's decision alone. And this is a direct repeat of verse 17, almost word for word. But buried deep, 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 deep in these verses, in this chapter, is a single phrase. After all these things happen, He says, listen to me. Listen to me. And this is Daniel. If we had a purple letter edition that had the words of Daniel, this would be in purple, deep, dark purple. This is from Daniel. Daniel asks the king to do two things. He says, one, break off your iniquities. Tear them away. The word break off means to rip in shreds, in pieces, destroy it. Break away. Stop sinning. Then he is specific as to actions. The sinning is internal. You need to stop this mindset you have of constantly sinning. And now the external. You should show mercy to the poor, kindness to the oppressed. The king needed to do these simple two things to lengthen his prosperity, to lengthen the good things in his life, the things that he'd been given, and acknowledge that God had given them these things and be grateful and thankful for them. But you need to change the way you are. You need to change. He would be righteous and help the poor. If he did those things, he would prosper. It didn't say don't be a king. It didn't say stop ruling. It didn't say take off your crown, but to act righteous. Note that Daniel would presume the king knew God at some level. He'd seen him respond three times already to the God that Daniel worshipped. One would think that, though he never overtly says this, that Daniel was trying to give Nebuchadnezzar the benefit of the doubt. Else he wouldn't have suggested it. He cared, I think, to a degree for the king. He knew the king vacillated between multiple opinions. He had his pagan gods, but he knew this God that Daniel represented was a powerful, powerful God. He gives no further details, not a one. The rest of the chapter brings us current, and we pick it up in verse 28, and it shifts again the narrative third person. Verse 28, all this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. All this came upon him. At the end of the 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. Now picture this. Fast forward 12 months later. The king is walking around the royal beautiful palace of Babylon. Babylon the Great. Verse 30, very pivotal. The king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon? Note the personal pronouns. Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? He asked the questions. Look at this great place. I built it. This represents my majesty, my power, my might, my honor. I did this. I'm the king. I'm the king. We're not sure what happened during these 12 months, but we know this is at the end of the 12 months. Did Nebuchadnezzar do what Daniel had asked him? It's hard to say. It's hard to say. Daniel had given him advice. Surely Daniel delicately meant there's a sin here, a big sin. You have an ego. You have a massive ego. And as we read these verses, when he says, my great kingdom, my power, my majesty, that ain't too humble. That's ego in its greatest development. He was asked to do righteous acts, something simple, an action to help the poor. Did he lower himself to assist others? We just don't know. One wonders, because it doesn't seem to be evident. If anything else, it lasted part of a year. And he was right back to where he was. All he had to do was act righteously and help others to have his prosperity, the good things in his life to continue. Let's keep reading. Verse 31. While the word was still the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you. while the king was still mouthing the words, it says, your kingdom has been taken from you, and they shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. We are told this over and over and over again. I think the writer, Daniel, is trying to make a point. Whomever he chooses. Verse 33, that very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird claws. We can easily mock King Nebuchadnezzar, can't we? But is that Daniel's objective, to tell the story of a king, an egomaniacal king? Is that really the story? Or is Daniel telling the reader the same thing? Remove your majesty, remove your ego, and do good. All of us must check our ego every day and our ability to mimic people like the king. The king became an animal. The Royal Pharmaceutical Journal published an article that this could potentially be, this is out of England, very respected journal, what happened to King Nebuchadnezzar could be a manifestation of what is known as boanthropy. Now the word bovine, where we get that word, boanthropy, is a psychological disorder in which the sufferer believes he or she is a cow or an ox. Aside from boanthropy, other explanations for his behavior, because they comment on Daniel 4 in this journal, other explanations for this behavior include porphyria, a group of enzyme disorders that manifest with neurological symptoms, including hallucinations, depression, anxiety, and paranoia. Patients think they're an animal. It exists, this condition, today. Interesting. He becomes an animal. It is a mental or a neurological disorder. There's also a Dead Sea fragment about just before the time of Christ. It's called the Prayer of Nabonidus. Nabonidus was the last king of Babylon, well after Nebuchadnezzar. This is the prayer of Nabonidus. I, Nabonidus, was afflicted with an evil ulcer for 7 years, and far from men I was driven until I prayed to the Most High God, and an exorcist pardoned my sins. He was a Jew from among the children of the exiles of Judah. During my stay at Tamai, I prayed to the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone and lime, because I thought and considered them gods. Very similar, very different. So what Nebuchadnezzar has gone through is very plausible, very believable. What's important here, in verse 34, he returns after those very two quick verses describing the 7 years of torment and his mental condition, acting like an animal. Verse 34 returns and we come full circle. We come full circle. Nebuchadnezzar ends where he began. Verse 34, and at the end of the time, note this is all in first person. I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven, and my understanding returned to me. And I blessed the Most High, and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is everlasting dominion. His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted back to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to him. He was even more prosperous than before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, this is the difference. I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all of those whose works are truth and his ways justice, those who walk in pride, he is able to put down. It ends exactly as the chapter began. Poor King Nebuchadnezzar, but very grateful, very thankful, King Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar's, the history is very blurry after this for the king in the historical record. Not long after this, it was a series of kings, and he did not live very long. So this is probably very close to the end of his life. We really don't know. But if he died this way, or ended his life this way, that would be a good thing. And we can speculate all day long. But at the end of the day, when we read this chapter, what does the chapter teach us? What is the takeaway? Because we see there is history, there is theology here, and a simple request toward a king. That simple request and the advice that Daniel gave to Nebuchadnezzar probably is a very good piece of advice for all of us. Two things jump out among others. One, God is sovereign and chooses who is who and what is what. God alone, verse 25 says, he gives to whomever he chooses. He chooses. He decides. This is something Nebuchadnezzar had trouble understanding. He thought he had done this by his might, his intellect, his knowledge, his power. So it demands a recognition that God, as we know him, the Father, and Jesus Christ, his Son, they control the universe. They always have. They always will. They are everlasting to everlasting because their kingdom and their dominion is from everlasting and to everlasting. Number two, it says to do good, to do acts of righteousness. But highly specific, highly specific, he says, to help the poor. Turn with me, if you would, to 2 Corinthians, a verse we use sometimes during the holy days. I was at a service where the person did use it during the holy days, during the offertory. 2 Corinthians in chapter 9. Verse 6. Paul says to the church of Corinthians, 2 Corinthians 9:6, but this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each give, each one give to he as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God indeed loves a cheerful giver. And that's where, as you may know, we get the word hilarious. It means hilarion, a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things. He's saying you're blessed. Whatever you have, whoever he's writing to in 2 Corinthians, he means whoever you are, in whatever condition you find yourself, whether you're worth this much money and have this many goods, or you have this much money and this many goods, it applies to everyone. We are richly blessed. He's able to make all grace abound toward you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. This is what we do. For he says, as it is written, he has dispersed abroad, he has given to the poor, his righteousness endures forever. This is exactly, this is from Psalm 112, verse 9. It's very, very often quoted. That a righteous act is giving to the poor. This is exactly what the advice little Daniel, the captive from Jerusalem, gave to the mighty King Nebuchadnezzar. If you'll just do these things, these simple things, your life will be better. You'll honor God because it's a command of God. To whom does this chapter speak? And just exactly what is its purpose? It's a great story. Tremendous story. It's got lots of, we'd say it has a lot of color and a lot of background, a lot of history. Interesting. A man has a dream. He can't interpret it. He's troubled it. This guy's got lots of bad dreams, right? I check his diet. He has lots of bad dreams. He can't interpret it. And he's got of all the experts, this, you know what this would be like? This would be like you're the captain of your ship at work. You're the CEO, COO, the grand poobah, right? You're the head guy or gal. And something's troubling you. And you've got all these experts, and you're paying them a lot of money. They're experts in their field. They just don't seem to have the answer. So who do you call? The janitor. Let's get the janitor in here. He's come up with two or three. We're going to keep him as kind of the janitor. We're going to give him a good title. That's what this is like. They had to ask somebody from outside, one of the captives, one of their slaves. They had to ask him for the answer. That's got to be humiliating. How would you like to be one of the experts? What would you think of this janitor? You'd want him gone. And we'll see later in the book, they want him gone. Who does this book speak to? Does it speak to Daniel? I guess. But he's the one that gives the advice. He's the one that interprets the dream. He's just the one that tells him the facts. It is what it is. You are that tree, O king. You will be that animal. Please don't shoot the messenger. But if you'll just do these things, these two things, let me give you some advice. Is it written to Nebuchadnezzar? Absolutely it is. He needed to change. As you heard in the first message, as is Nebuchadnezzar, so are we. So as Israel, so are we. It's to the reader, you and I, and our ego. We are, in a way, Nebuchadnezzar. We are, in a way, Nebuchadnezzar. We are often, on the one hand, we'll say, we know there is a God. Intellectually, we're on the Sabbath day because we realize there is a God. On the other hand, we feel justified in our conceits because as Nebuchadnezzar had his many gods, we do too, and we justify them. We often say, look what I have done. Intellectually, look what I have accomplished. And it may be true, but it is also intellectually shallow, for we have limited God's involvement. Now, I have an ego. I don't want to talk about my ego. I'd rather talk about your ego. It's a lot safer. And this thing kind of protects me, right? No, I won't do that to you. But it is intellectually shallow when we say that we have no problems. We have no gods. We worship no other. When indeed, down deep inside, we do. And for only us, we are the ones that know exactly what pulls us away from what we should say, should do, should know. We limit God's involvement. It's exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. He didn't acknowledge that God is the one that chooses. God is the one that sets up. God is the one that takes down. God the Father and his Son Jesus Christ decide much of what we are to do. They will give us some great advice, like Daniel. So Daniel is kind of the godlike figure here, of dispensing God's advice. Do good. Help the poor. Right? Simple. Can we start with that? Something real simple. But it remains for us to do it or to not do it, to not take these actions. Turn with me, if you would, to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25 is known for many, many different things. It's known, I guess, predominantly, possibly in the Church of God, predominantly, the parable of the 10 virgins. It's also known as the sheep and the goats. But there's a third section that's all the way down in verse 37, all the way down toward the end. In verse 37, it starts, he's talking about the sheep and the goats. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, verse 31, verse 37, we'll cut to the chase here. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, because they've been asked the question, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, thirsty and gave you drink? When did we see you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king, notice the analogy, the king will say, the king will answer, and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you did it unto me. You did it unto me. We live in a type of Babylon. Some of us may feel this society and the system differently than others. It may be oppressive to some of you or a light inconvenience to others. But nonetheless, this is not our world. But we live in it, and we have to exist in it. It's ruled by a different king of a different age. But in living here, do we concentrate on this not being the world we want? Are we obsessed and completely taken over by the thought, I don't belong here. I'm really not here. Therefore, I'm going to eschew the world because it's of the world. No, brethren, you're in it. You live in it. You conduct commerce in it. You drive on their roads. You drive in their cars. You use their gas. We are deeply in it. Therefore, we act accordingly because we cannot do it to the exclusion of doing what is right. Daniel did not say to Nebuchadnezzar, not once do you read in this chapter, you know what? You need to start with the Sabbath. You need to start with the food laws. No, what he asked him was just do good things and start with somebody that doesn't have much. Is that so hard? Apparently it was. Apparently it was. Jesus tells this in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 and Luke 6. He says, if you love only the people who love you back, what good is that? Because even the what? Who even does that? The sinners do that. Even normal people in the world do that. Why do you love them? Well, they love me. Why do you give them things? They give me things. That's why I do it. It's kind of this reciprocal thing we got going. I do good to people who do good to me. God says we're supposed to do good to people who don't do good for us, who do not have our best interest at heart. If we love only those who love us, what value is that? Sinners do the same. If we assist and pray for only those who pray and assist us, what value is that? What good is that? We live in a world where our God tells us and commands us to perform non-reciprocal acts. You aren't going to get anything back. You will not be responded to in kind. That is rough medicine. You will give to those who will not and cannot give to you. You will do good acts to people who cannot and will not do good acts to you. So there's non-reciprocal righteous acts, especially of the poor, and you can define poor any way you like. Whatever definition you decide, fine by me. Because you know what? It's not my life. It's your life. But indeed, it's about choosing. It's about choosing, and that's what Nebuchadnezzar was asked to do, to choose to do right, to choose to do good. God has indeed chosen you, everyone who is with us here and over the Ethernet. God has indeed chosen you and me, and indeed, this Thanksgiving week, we are to remember he has given us so much. So let me ask you, to whom much has been given? A little louder. Much is expected. Very much. Have a great Thanksgiving.